Welcome, everyone, to the latest episode of the Electric Podcast. As usual, I'm Fred, your host, and I'm joined with Seth Weintraub. How are you doing, Seth?
We're good over here, Fred.
Yeah, you're down in Florida. You escaped the cold. Leave us in the freezing weather right now.
Yeah, it's actually a little sweaty up down here. I turned the air conditioner off for the podcast, but yeah, it's kind of nice.
Yeah, you're talking about air conditioning right now. We're all about eating over here. And speaking of heat and cold, this week Tesla released a brand new software update that we discussed earlier this week, but came out last night, actually. So we're talking about battery preheating. So Tesla already has climate control that you can activate directly from your mobile application. But this week, they went a step further and added to the preconditioning of the cabin, they added preconditioning of the battery pack itself. Because as you may know, in cold weather, affect EVs in many different ways. Mostly people think about just warming up the cabin, affects, takes energy from the battery packs. So it's energy that you don't use for the range of the vehicle. That's standard, that everybody understand that. But it goes beyond that. The cold can affect directly the battery management system and the several features that are based on the battery pack. We're talking about just full power output can be limited, regenerative braking can be limited, and what else can be limited? There's something.
I guess range is obviously the big one.
Yeah, efficiency loss in general. So, to avoid that, the battery pack will use some energy to warm itself up to a temperature level more adequate for performance. And when you do that, you don't using the energy propulsing the vehicle forward. So what Tesla added this week with the preconditioning is if your car is plugged in, it will draw energy from the charging, so whatever charging solution that you have, in order to prepare the battery pack to be to go on the road. So you're going to use that energy instead of using energy from the battery pack itself. So that's pretty useful for some cold weather area, like here in Quebec.
Yeah, this is one of those things that it's like, as a Tesla owner, you're kind of like, all right, how do I get my car prepared for a long drive in the cold? Up until now, the assumption is, well, I heat my car and it'll also heat the battery. And I think to an extent it did before, but it sounds like this update will absolutely heat the battery as long as you're plugged in. Like if you're just at the ski resort and you want to precondition, that's not going to help.
That's not working. You can still use cabin heating. So you can heat the cabin, start the climate control system. But yeah, you won't be able to use the new feature, which is preconditioning the battery pack. So I'm going to do just a quick share stream for the people that are watching on YouTube. And I'm going to describe it for people that are audio only. So Tesla released the feature just last night. We talked about this new icon with this new snowflakes that shows the range that is blocked from the cold. So that was already in the latest application, but that's the new logo that you get here. So you get the same snowflakes within the climate control application on the mobile application. And you click on that sort of battery pack with a snowflake in it, and it activates the new battery preheating system.
That's interesting. And it'll even do that when you're on a 110 volt. Like, something that doesn't really have that much power that'll probably require some battery power.
Yeah, well, right now, if you're 110 volt and it's cold enough to need the battery conditioning, it's going to level off. Like, you're not going to be charging. The power that you're going to draw going to be equal to what you need to battery conditioning. So you stop your charging and you divert your energy to precondition the battery. So
yeah, that already happens now. Yeah. So we went skiing a couple weeks ago, and you know, we only have a 110 up there. So we were plugged into the 110. I have like 200 miles of charge, which, you know, we're only driving 70 miles to Albany. And then I turn on the interior cabin heat, and instead of 200 miles, I now, like, almost immediately I have 190 miles.
Mm-hmm.
And that's still, we're still plugged in. So it, you know, drops pretty significantly right away, a lot of energy to heat. And I'm assuming because it's plugged in, it was also kind of doing the preconditioning. So I imagine this update allows you to determine whether or not you want to precondition the battery or not. Because before, it would precondition the battery, but it was kind of like, you know, it was using its own smarts, where this is, it allows you to control the preconditioning.
Well, if you're just plugged in on 110, I don't think there's any preconditioning for the battery to, like, if you're charged at a supercharger, then some of the energy is going to be used to condition the battery to obtain an optimal charge rate. But if you're on 110, I'm not sure that's something that they take into account. But right now, the main difference is if you know you're going somewhere within an hour or so, because Tesla recommend an hour for the feature to work fully. If you know you're going somewhere an hour and you open your application and it says it's cold enough that you could use preconditioning, you can click on it and you should be able to get more range out of your car as soon as you unplug it, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, that's absolutely helpful. I know there's, you know, the Chevy Bolt also has something similar, but it uses so much energy. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, the BMW i3 also has a similar feature. Tesla is able to add it over the air with, even on my car that is almost 5 years and is 5 years old now. So that's what's pretty awesome. And speaking of Tesla update this week in the news, we also learned that Elon Musk, he hinted that there's going to be a lot of new upcoming software updates for Tesla's vehicle, and one of those is going to be a major overhaul of the navigation system.
So do you think they're just going to have like Android Auto and CarPlay, or is it going to be a Tesla navigation solution?
Well, what we've been reporting over the last few months for our readers, if you've been following, you know that we've been on top of that story for a while now. A lot of new map modules came up into the Tesla software code. So it's not on the front end. It's not the user cannot see it right now. But if you have access to the source code of Tesla software, because if you're not familiar with it, for people, the way that Tesla software works, when they send out an update, all their vehicle and then the entire fleet receive the same package, the same software build, and each car, depending on the specific capacity of the vehicle. So if that's autopilot, then the autopilot software become activated and such. But all cars, even the old ones like mine that doesn't have autopilot, and then they get pushed a software build that has the information in there. So that includes even sometimes the test fleet vehicle that Tesla uses to develop those features. So when you see, when we talk about quote unquote Tesla hackers, are those people that are owners and they get to see all those information, all that information, and they can see what's not on the front end, so what the user cannot see. And what we've been reporting over the last few months are those new map modules that owners cannot see, but if you get access to the code, you can see. And what we reported was new Tesla is using open source map engines and navigation engines, and adapting them to work with Tesla's current system of HD map that they are collecting through the autopilot system, and adapting them, to, of course, to work on Tesla's vehicle Model S, X, and Model 3. So instead of using, for example, just Google Map or EAR, for example, that a lot of automakers are starting to use, Tesla wants to use a more simple open map system that gets frequently updated. So that's another issue, too, that a lot of owners have. Tesla's map currently are not being updated very often. A lot of people are still... we got an update recently. I think it was map that were updated from April 2017. But before that, I think it was like a full year that the map hadn't been updated. So that's kind of a bummer for a lot of people.
I mean, how do you find the mapping? I think the maps are okay. I mean, it's mostly Google Maps, but I find that the navigation kind of tends towards big roads. You know, interstates, when there's like a faster way to get there, if you know, direct by smaller routes. So like, you know, when I'm driving around Vermont or upstate New York, I don't really trust Tesla's navigation versus like Google. So, you know, I'll often see, you know, it'll route me like in a big L shape, and I'll be like, huh, I wonder if there's some roads that can take me between there. I'll bring up my phone and put on Google Maps, and, you know, lo and behold, there's a way that'll save me 20 minutes or whatever.
Yeah. When I go somewhere, normally I'll check on Google first on my phone. Then I get into the car and I enter it on Tesla system. And normally I get pretty similar routes from Google. But nowadays, more often, I end up using opening up Waze or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I put that on and for like real time traffic information and rerouting for detours and stuff like that. There's nothing to compare at this point, I think. I don't think Tesla is there yet.
Yeah, but I mean, I do like some parts of the experience. Like, it shows you how much battery you're going to have at your destination.
I mean, battery huge. For charging, there's no doubt that that's the way to go.
Yeah, but, and also, I don't think the time is particularly accurate. So, like, if it says I'm going to be 2 hours to get to where I'm going, and there's some traffic involved, I don't think Tesla takes that into consideration. Whereas Google will say, you know, you're trying to get to JFK Airport, there's like, you know, 30 minutes extra of traffic, you're going to be a half hour later. Whereas Tesla will just say, this is, you know, you're going 60 miles per hour on this road, you'll get there in an hour. Google say an hour and a half, and usually Google's a little bit more accurate.
Yeah, I agree with that too. Like, and well, or also it's it takes some time to get more accurate. I think, like, if I have a 2 hour drive to do, for the first, even though they don't change the route, for the first 10-15 minutes, it keeps adjusting the time. After 10-15 minutes, then I have something that's more accurate in terms of ETA.
Yeah, I mean, so there's work to do. Do you see Tesla ever doing Android Auto or CarPlay? I mean, I know a lot of people want that, and it feels to me like Elon is against it, and he wants to build his own ecosystem.
Yeah, because almost 2 years, over 2 years ago, they said that it was doing some. You never mentioned Apple CarPlay or Android Auto by name, but he did mention phone mirroring, which is basically what those applications do.
Right.
So. Whether it would be a Tesla application to do that, or they'd be licensing Android Auto or CarPlay, that was never clear. But what was clear is that they dropped that idea altogether, because I think the first ETA was like end of 2015 or something like that. So it's long gone by now. And what I think everything points to right now is Tesla owning the entire ecosystem altogether.
Right. Because, and that brings in the music as well.
Yeah, well, that was a big indicator for sure. When he started talking about his own music streaming service, that's like another step above just like an app store that we were thinking at least would make sense. Maybe like a Tesla app store for the third-party application within Tesla's ecosystem, that makes sense. But then he's talking about his own streaming service. But what I was most thinking is like, because where it starts to make sense is that the in-car experience is going to change a lot within the next few years, especially because of autonomous driving, and the time spent in a car is going to change a lot. And I think a lot of companies are going to see opportunities to offer in-car services.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Tesla is seeing that right now, and that's what's stopping them to let Apple inside this car or let Google inside the car too much. So they want to keep owning that experience, I think.
right.
for when autonomous arrives, which is another issue. Because so when Musk was posting about some upcoming update earlier this week, a lot of people started assuming maybe Autopilot 2 is coming, because just a month ago they were teasing a big update for Autopilot coming by the end of the year. And the end of the year was also the deadline. You will remember the deadline for the cross-country demo drive. There's just a week left in the year. So
I don't know if that's happening.
Yeah, I don't think that's happening either, especially since he stopped talking about it. And so I don't remember when was the exact last time that it was mentioned, but since it hasn't been much in the news lately.
I mean, how would it even supercharge? Like, I don't even know.
Like, yeah, that's the thing too. If there's no human interaction at all, you need the superchargers ready to be the snake charger or something similar. Yeah. And we've never seen that pop up yet.
No.
But there are a lot of other chargers are coming up though. Tesla was aiming to get 10,000 superchargers installed by the end of the year. They're not going to hit that, we're pretty sure at this point, unless there's a big surprise in the coming weeks and they had hundreds of stations well hidden. But regardless that they hit it or not, was an impressive year for supercharger deployment, that's for sure. I think they just, this week, they passed the 1,000 mark, 8,000 mark. They passed the 1,000 station mark last month.
Yep.
And now they passed the 8,000 stalls, supercharger stalls. And also the number of stalls per station is increasing rapidly. And we don't see much, many 6-8 stall station anymore. If you see a new station popping up, it's like 16, 12, sometimes even 24 stalls. I think the new one that came out last week in Ontario was 24, biggest in Canada yet.
Yeah, and you know, this is kind of the thing that kind of gets me about ChargePoint and EVgo and Greenlots and all those guys. Like they talk about how they have, you know, all these stations everywhere, but like they're all, every single station that I've been to almost is one single DC charger. I mean, at best it'll have a DC, it'll have a CHAdeMO and a CCS together, but, and you know, both of those things can charge at the same time, maybe at a reduced rate. But I mean, it's nothing like, you know, like if you go to one of these places, like it's not like you have a bunch of other options and there's one single solitary station there. It's kind of scary. And it's kind of like, I don't think it's a great, I mean, you have to have some sort of redundancy. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you're driving in the middle of the winter and you have to make the station in the middle of New York and it's like, it's down or it's, you know, somebody's there and they're just like, mm-hmm. there's a line of two or three people. I mean, it doesn't really happen that often to me anyway, but like that could happen. And that's like, it's an anxiety experience. Whereas Tesla's got at least, I mean, all the new stations are at least 8. I mean, I went to the new Albany one that has like 50, and you know, there's always Teslas there. There's always like 2, 3, 6, but I mean, there's like 40 stations, so there's never going to be an issue there.
The big difference is obvious, is that, and that's why right now, if other automakers are not, and I don't see it yet, like Tesla. What the third party networks, charging networks, it's their only way to make money. It's to have people charging and to have deploying more station. So they don't make money if a station is just sitting there without charging it, without anyone charging at it. So that's why it makes more sense for them to build a small number of stalls per station to make sure that the user rate is higher. But Tesla doesn't have that problem because they started the supercharger network from the get-go without it being a profit center, but instead being an advantage, a benefit to their owners. So that's why you go, like I think like the 4 or 5 time I used the Drummondville supercharger, which is just a 8-stall supercharger. never more than one or two person there at a time every time I was there. So that's not making, if people were even paying to charge there, you wouldn't be making any money for it, because you install like probably $200,000 to $500,000 charging station, and you get a user rate of maybe 10% or something. That makes no sense as an investment. But Tesla had this big vision of eventually having a huge fleet, and at that point, there's going to be a point that the 8-stall won't make sense at all, and you're going to need a 20-stall there or something like that. So that vision really helped them a lot. So right now, when I'm seeing those other automakers partnering with the third parties, the charging network owners, because that's what we're seeing right now. Like Nissan is with EVgo. I think Chevy too is with EVgo. Who are they partnered with?
I think or ChargePoint. It's basically EVgo or ChargePoint.
I think it's ChargePoint, right? So the partner with ChargePoint, which is okay. I'm not like blaming ChargePoint or EVgo for that, because it makes sense. If your business model is to make money with charging station, you want to have a high use rate, and to have a high use rate, you have to limit the number of stations. It makes sense. But I think the automakers are the one making the mistake to partner with them, because that's not the best user experience.
Yeah, I mean, what I think, it seems like a no-brainer, but like, why doesn't Chevy just say, hey, dealers, you want to sell the Chevy Bolt? Or regardless, even if you don't want to sell the Chevy Bolt, just put in a DC charger, like just but one.
I don't think that's the more of a location problem lately.
Well, I mean, car dealers are usually kind of like on the highways and in the middle of, you know, like where highways meet, because your people are coming from a long way to buy cars. It's actually not a bad place. Like I was just thinking about all the car dealers I know are kind of, you know, not too far from a highway and kind of spread out. The other thing, like, you know, to expand on what you were saying about the business model thing, you know, because Tesla is, you know, aligned with the automobiles, they're putting superchargers in the middle of North Dakota and, you know, South Dakota, so that people on the East Coast can get to the West Coast. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't even get from Los Angeles to Phoenix with DC chargers, because nobody wants to put one in the middle of the desert, because they're thinking, well, who's going to be here? Like, you know, this doesn't help my business model, even though, like, everybody who has a Chevy Bolt in LA and wants to go to Phoenix needs to stop at a DC charger between the two cities. And there's nothing there. It's crazy. Like, you know, I saw a post, I think, on Reddit where this guy was like, I need to go to Phoenix. I don't, you know, what do I do? And basically it came up with like a level 2 camper charger that he's got to spend like 3 or 4 hours at in the middle of the desert.
Yeah. Seeing charging infrastructure as a business right now, at one point it's going to make a lot of sense, but right now it doesn't make much sense. It needs to be automakers need to see it as something that is complementary to selling electric vehicles, like Tesla did from the get-go. And as long as other automakers don't see it like that, I think they're going to have a big issue for wider adoption. They probably not have a big issue right now with the Chevy Volt, for example, since it's still pretty limited production. But for wider adoption, I think it's going to be a big issue. And we don't see anything like that. Like I haven't seen anyone other than maybe the new Ionity and Ultra E network in Europe. I don't know if you've seen that recently, but there's like a big partnership between BMW, Volkswagen, Audi.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And they have two separate network that they brought together, Ionity. Which is more like a east to west, west to east coverage in Europe, and the Ultra E, which is I think BMW, Audi, and a few people in the in the hardware and charging industry, like I think it's Haligo that's leading the effort. That's from north to south, so Norway to Austria and Italy and those places. And so that's a big partnership that they're looking to really just make electric highways. So they go to specific highways that are used, and they are talking about more charge point. But even then, I think it's like four charge point per station. So it's not to the supercharger level yet. The only advantage is that they're already deploying at 250 kilowatts. So that's nice.
That's serious. I think it's 150 and or 175 going up to 350.
Yeah.
With an update. So New York actually is very progressive in this area, and they've partnered with Green Lots. And they now have a lot of the New York State throughways lit up, you know, basically at all the rest stops. At the when you're on the toll highway and you don't want to get off, you just go into this little area that's got like food and gas and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Just about every one of those going north from New York City all the way up to where you're at in Plattsburgh and stuff. Is getting a Green Lots 50 kilowatt charger, CCS and CHAdeMO. And then they're also doing across to Buffalo. So they're doing something like that. It's kind of like emergency-ish feeling. You know, not emergency, but like just enough to get you by. I mean, you have to stay there for an hour or so if you're in a Bolt or Tesla and you want to charge with these things. But they're there and they work. I used one last time I was up just out of curiosity, but they work. The CHAdeMO adapter to the Tesla works.
Yeah, and what we're seeing also, I've seen this mainly in Europe yet, but I'm sure there are other examples of it. But even normally Tesla supercharger are like independent from other charging station, but I think it was in the Czech Republic. And a big, huge charging station for electric vehicles that had a supercharger, but also a bunch of other stations, a few DC CCS CHAdeMO combo, and a bunch of level 2 chargers with the type 2 connector for any European EV. I think that's a good idea, though, like to combine. Because if a location makes sense for a supercharger, then it probably makes sense for other charger too. So to try to and you can try to combine the power station needed.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, you already have a huge inverter, turning the 480 to DC. So might as well split that up. There's actually a couple in Connecticut that have regular, they have superchargers, but they also have DC fast chargers and even a level 2 station, but they're very small.
I'm sure we're going to see more example of that. And while we are on the supercharger subject, I'm going to do a quick segue to another news now that we had this week with the supercharger, which kind of angered a few people in the EV community. Tesla announced the no, that was last week. Did we talk about that? Was that this week? Supercharger fair use, that was last week, right? Did I get that messed up? Yeah, I'm pretty sure I did.
Yeah, I think that was last week.
Yeah, never mind then. We have plenty of news anyway this week to cover, especially with Tesla, with the Model 3. Model 3 was kind of crazy this year. A lot of people describe it to me within Tesla as the week for the Model 3. So over the last few weeks, we've seen some more like anecdotal evidence that Tesla was increasing in Model 3 deliveries. Last week was like with the opening of the delivery center in Los Angeles, and a bunch of SpaceX employees started getting deliveries at that location and everything. And they started a few regular customer deliveries. But this week, schedule a ton of Model 3 deliveries from regular customers, and we're talking about hundreds here, and going into next week too. So even people that were on the second batch of configuration invitations are getting deliveries this week and next week, or this weekend and next week maybe. Anyway, I don't have all the information, of course, but we receive dozens and dozens of reports from Model 3, early Model 3 reservation holder that configured the cars, and they are all getting scheduled deliveries in the coming week. So Tesla is really pushing to have a significant delivery volume of Model 3 by the end of the year, for sure. And you can go on Electrek for all the cars that were spotted too. So there was a drone flyover. This is the Fremont factory earlier this week. I think it was on Thursday that the drone flew over the Fremont factory, and it spotted hundreds and hundreds of Model 3s coming out of the factory in the parking lots, being loaded into trucks to go to the delivery centers in California. So Tesla is still limiting deliveries to California, especially the Bay Area and Los Angeles.
For the most part. I mean, we've seen them.
We've seen that other place. But I'm talking for regular customers.
Right.
Yeah. Owners and employees, and some employees from all over the country now got vehicles because they need to get familiar with it anyway. So especially service centers and stuff, they a few people take deliveries and they can get familiar with the car before Tesla opens up the market for Model 3 deliveries. But right now, Los Angeles, Bay Area, getting a lot of deliveries. So you're going to see a lot more cars in the near future. Our home, Jameson Dow, is taking delivery next week, I think.
Oh, that's exciting. Didn't he and his dad both get... aren't they both?
I think that the family is getting like three Model 3s. I think he's getting one, and his cousin is getting one, and his dad is getting one. So I don't know who's getting. I think his dad may be getting it first or something like that. But they're all getting their Model 3s in the coming days or weeks at worst case scenario. And so for sure we're gonna have a more in depth review than what we published so far from. Our short test drive that we had earlier this year.
Yeah, and we're starting to see people. You know, I still haven't seen a firsthand. I saw a delivery today, a YouTube video, but I still haven't. Like, you know, usually some of our contemporaries know somebody who, you know, lends them their Model 3 for an hour, and they kind of jump in it and ride it around and give some quick observations. But I still haven't seen anybody with like a long term like. You know, I've been driving this for a week. You know, these are the things I like. These are the things that, you know, I'm worried about. You know, that kind of review. So hopefully Jamie will have that and we'll be able to publish a couple of those pretty soon.
Yeah, when we do an Electrek review, we like to, if we do a test drive review, that's something that we only had the car for a few hours or whatever. But if we call something and like an Electrek review, We had many more hours with the cars and hopefully like a week or so. Or something.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of like a week thing.
Yeah.
In the past, it has been. So also, you know, my own personal situation kind of changed this week.
Right.
I had the... So I'm in New York. I switched my address from my wife's grandmother's house in San Jose to back to New York and back and forth a couple times. So I don't know if that helped me, but or hurt me. But my delivery window is November, which is last month, to January, which is next month. So that means, you know, if recent patterns hold up, I should be getting a email in the next couple batches. You know, in the next couple weeks at the most. Like, you know, if it, yeah, whatever. So. Mm. I'll be one of the first outside of California if everything continues to hold up to get a delivery. But in addition to that, I got I had a second reservation, and my original plan was to get one, use it, and then sell it, and then get the all-wheel drive when that one comes out because in New York. So that plan was working out. But then last week, I heard because that I had. Bought a Tesla, sold it, and bought another Tesla. I had credit for two Teslas. So my second reservation went from late 2018, which is like a year from now, to December to February, which is you know, another month. So, you know, I have the opportunity to have two Tesla Model 3s here in the next month and a half, 2 months. So that'll be kind of interesting. I'm not sure what I'm going to do. I was kind of planning to, like, I had this plan worked out, and now I'm a little bit like,
because import one in Canada.
Yeah, maybe we'll just we'll drive it to the border. Yeah. But honestly, like, I don't need the 300 miles. Like, I'm perfectly happy with 200 miles. We have a Model X 90, so, you know, when we go on our trips, we're not going to be, you know, in the sedan. So I really don't need 200 miles. My commute is like 10 minutes to the coffee shop. So I really don't need I don't need the mileage. So I almost don't want to pay $49,000, although I know I could flip it pretty quick probably and make some kind of profit. But I don't know. I'm still I'm kind of a little skittish about what I should do about this situation. If there's anybody out there who wants a Tesla, let me know. And a Tesla Model 3, and maybe I can hook you up.
There's no one on the next track that wants it.
No, I don't think so.
There is, that's there. Anyway, other Model 3 news this week that came out yesterday. I got my hands on the Model 3, the full warranty for the Model 3. That was the full document. We shared that on the next track. And pretty standard. So we already knew that the warranty was a bit different for the Model 3 than what Tesla previously offered for the Model S and X. Main difference meaning that Tesla dropped the unlimited mileage on the 8-year limited battery and drive unit warranty. So instead, you get 100,000 miles for the standard battery and 120,000 miles, I think, for the long-range version. But the news from, so that we already knew anyway, but what the document revealed is that Tesla added a new mention for the retention capacity. So the we know that a battery pack will degrade, lose some capacity over time, over mileage, mainly over use, over charge and discharge. You lose some capacity. For the Model S and Model X warranty, there's a mention of that, but there's no guaranteed capacity in it in the warranty itself. So Tesla basically says, if you lose capacity, you lose capacity, and there's no like magic number that say, oh, that's not normal, and now we're gonna replace the battery pack. Though if it happens, I'm pretty sure like you get some major range loss for no apparent reason. I'm pretty sure you can arrange something with Tesla that can find out something that's not normal. But for the Model 3, they made it clearer by adding a mention that the battery pack will retain at least 70% of this capacity within the warranty period, which is 8 years or 100,000 miles, 120,000 miles in, when it comes to the long-range battery pack. But with
so 70%, you know, initially you're like, well, 70%, that's a lot of battery gone.
Yeah.
But that's more than, I think Nissan did 60%.
Around 66%. The Bolt EV is 60%. The Kia is also, I think, 60-70%. They pretty much took the highest possible option. They beat the competition in terms of the warranty for the battery retention capacity. But that's just like to reassure people that are not too familiar with range capacity over time, because I talked to Tesla about it, and they said that they still expect the over the 8 years that most people are going to see 80% and greater energy capacity within that pack. And if we, and not only that, they said that was based on the what you're seeing right now for the Model S and Model X, and what we see with the early data for the older vehicles, it's even closer to 90% that the battery is keeping after 100,000 miles. So it's not something we're too worried about. It really just sounds like other people are doing it, like the Bolt
right.
TVs. Is
right,
doing
you want to so, you want to compare?
Yeah. So if if you go to a Chevy dealership and the salesman is good for some reason, and he says that he could tell a customer that is looking between a Model 3 and a Chevy Bolt TV, and he could say, "Look, the Model 3 doesn't even have a guaranteed capacity after the warranty." So that's just a way to cover themselves, I think. I wouldn't look too much into it other than that, since I would instead look at the real data that we have right now, which is from the older Model S and X. Though I would also mention that the Model 3 has a new battery pack architecture, new battery cells.
Yeah, untested.
So
that's a little bit helpful. Now, so this warranty, I didn't read it. If you decide you want to supercharge every day instead of charging normal, and you decide you don't want to, you want to charge it all the way up 100% every day. Does that cover even if you're crazy with your battery? Like, even if you're just insane?
I haven't seen any mention of that, but I did see a mention that in the warranty, the redirect to Tesla's guidance to prolong the battery life. So they do make reference that if you want to conserve your battery life as much as possible, then frequent DC charging is not the greatest idea. Also, leaving the car unplugged is not the greatest idea, especially in the cold and stuff like that. So they do share guidance to prolong the battery life, but I didn't see anything that if you abuse. Well, it's not even an abuse. Like, a lot of people need to supercharge often.
Maybe they live in an apartment in the city or something, and they don't have access to a level 2 charger.
Exactly. I didn't see anything about that, and I don't think it would be fair to anyway.
Right.
And we even see we've saw a few examples this year of people that were crazy about supercharging other DC chargers too on their Model S, and it didn't seem to have that much of an impact on it. And there was even a study from I think it was the Tesla Owners Club in Belgium, and they gathered a lot of data on the battery capacity, battery capacity retention of their club members, and they also gathered the data for battery, the number of DC charging event, and not only did there seem to be a correlation between those two and greater battery loss, but actually they seem to be a correlation with greater battery capacity retention and higher charge rate, DC charging event. So that was kind of a head scratcher for a lot of people, because that's not the common knowledge that we have.
Speaking of that, we don't want to talk about that 90 kilowatt hour graph that we were handed, do we?
No, we're not supposed to.
Just yet.
But
maybe at some point.
Yeah, let's just say that Tesla has improved over time, and more recently in its battery capacity retention and some different specific models can have a worse battery retention capacity than others within Tesla's lineup.
I'll also say I have a 90, a Model X 90, and I feel like my Model S had a better, which was a 60, had a better retention. Although the Model X is fine, but I'm not sure I would get a 90 again. I think I would go either up to 100 or down to 75.
Well, unless you buy used, you can't anyway. So.
Well, I'm leasing, so that thing's going back. I mean, theoretically.
Yeah, that's a less of an issue, I feel like, if you're leasing. Let's move on. We're already 45 minutes in, and we've been stuck to mostly Tesla all podcasts, which is not really surprising if you're following it. Right. there was another interesting news, I think, this week. The startup, the EV startup world is something that we try to cover a lot because it's an interesting world, and we don't consider Tesla a startup anymore. At least I don't. We have like 33,000 employees by now, so it's not I know that some still do. Some still you don't consider Tesla a startup anymore.
They're worth more than Chevy and Ford, so I wouldn't say no.
So, but yeah, that's another good point. Like both on the market value, they're not very much a startup. But then, like people consider Uber still a startup sometimes. So that's not necessarily a valid point. Then,
right.
Then there's a number of employees. Then there's just like the startup culture that maybe Tesla still has. So what's a startup anymore? No one knows. And also it's like 10 years old at this point. So, and more than 10 years old, 2004, 2003, 2004. So it's not a startup anymore.
They're crazy like a startup, but they're not a startup.
The pace is like a startup, but that's pretty much it. Right. And also because they're against like much bigger companies in terms of employees and resources, then they look crappy sometimes against those.
But right, and anyway, the auto industry is really old. Like most companies are hundreds of years, you know, over 100 years old or, you know, 80, whatever.
So in comparison, yeah.
In comparison, they're relatively new.
Yeah. But if you think EV startup right now and over the last year or two, Faraday Future, Lucid Motors, NIO, or formerly known as Next EV, other big startup like the Future Mobility Corp, which is now known as Byton, BYTON. Those are the big players right now in the field. But Faraday Future, I think, claimed the spotlight for a long time. Because they grew so fast. I mean, they grew to 1,000 employees in less than 2 years, I think.
Yeah, and they pulled some like real, genuinely good talent.
That's what got them in the map. On the map, I think. Like we were the first to report on them, and what got our attention was like their hires were impressive, both from the tech industry, from the old school automotive industry. They pulled a lot of people in. But over the last year or year and a half, things went downhill for them, and financially they had a lot of troubles. The leadership was murky. It wasn't clear who was in charge of the companies. The main backer, Jia Yuting, YT, people are calling YT Jia, billionaire, Chinese billionaire from the Chinese tech industry. Try to make it big in the EV industry in the US and California and such, but tries to retain control, doesn't want to leave control of the companies, and he owns a majority of the shares and everything. And things went downhill, but they're still able to attract good talent. And some of the new talent that they attracted earlier this year was Stefan Kraus, former CFO of BMW. And CFO of Deutsche Bank too. Then there was also one of his colleagues from BMW, Ulrich. I forget his name. Give me a second. I know. Ulrich Krenz. He was the head of BMW High. So the all the BMW EV programs. So and still a lot of important people. And he was made CTO at Faraday Future. So but mainly Kraus seemed to be like the new second in command after YT, and his job was to, based on our sources, his job was to like get an hold of Faraday Future as finances, which was everywhere. They went to the Formula E. And they started. They were working with on not only their cars, but Aston Martin as EV. They were working on Lyko, which was YT's Chinese company. So things were all over the place, and so he was supposed to focus the company back on the FF91, which is their first EV that they plan to bring to production, which a lot of people liked when they unveiled it. Like it was a cool looking car with a cool feature and everything. Never really mentioned the price point for it, so we don't know if it made sense in the market. But in term purely on technology, it looked like a great car that did well at Pikes Peak too. So it looks like it was a decent EV, but they couldn't bring it to market. And So Kraus, focus them back on the EV, bring it to market at a smaller scale with a new, instead of the $1 billion factory in Nevada, they went with a smaller factory in California. But what our sources told us this week is that when you try to raise the money to get the car to production, he managed to get some deals on the table, but those deals were dependent on YT either resigning or taking a step back and a smaller role, or giving up too much equity inside the company. And he never accepted it. So he was turning down all those deals. And at some point, based on our sources, Kraus was couldn't deal with it anymore because he didn't see any outcome that would lead to Faraday Future getting a cash injection and bringing the car to production. So he left. And when he left last month was a big deal because of, he left 2 months ago, actually. He left in October, but we only learned about it last month when Faraday Future sent out a press release saying that they're going to sue Kraus, that he didn't comply to his job requirements. And then Kraus right away responded that he wasn't terminated. He was not being sued. That he left, he quit the month before. And now what we learned this week is that he quit to make a new EV startup. So it's basically a Faraday Future spinoff with a bunch of Faraday Future employees. Right now, what we see is a lot of the top ones, like the one that we were impressed that the Faraday Future hired in the first place, including Kranz and the chief designer, Richard Kim. A few Tesla employees too that went from Tesla to Faraday, now to the new startup, which I'm going to give you the name of the startup, which I'm not a fan of at all because I can pronounce it. E-Velocity.
E-Velocity. Maybe just E-Velocity. I don't know.
It's not how you spell velocity.
I don't know. Whatever. I don't know.
Yeah. Either way. Like, but... The company has two things going for it already, which is some top talent in the auto industry, and some fundings, apparently good financial backing. Because what our sources told us is that Kraus took some of the deals that were on the table for Faraday Future, or at least he used the groundwork for those deals to just raise money for. The Velocity startup, which basically is starting like Faraday Future, but they are going to have to give up the IP that Faraday Future already developed, but build a new EV from there.
Do you think they'll do a truck, like, or not a truck, an SUV like the FF91, or do you think they'll go in a different direction?
I have absolutely no idea, to be honest with you. The startup was registered a month ago, so I'm not even sure that they have an idea. So it's brand new, but there is a lot of space in the EV industry right now, in the auto industry in general, within this transition to electric transport. So I think it's an exciting new startup to come. But then at the same time that came out, YT claimed that he managed to close a $1 billion deal for Faraday Future. So,
but he also got put on China's blacklist for people who don't pay their bills. So,
yeah, in China. So that's why I'm saying he claims that they got a $1 billion deal. So I'll be glad that if Faraday Future has $1 billion in his bank account right now, in the company bank account, and they can. Still keep the development of their EV and bring the car to production. I'm happy in it.
Or pay all the people that they owe right now.
Yeah. So that too. Like, there's a lot of people that are old right now too. So yeah, that's a good point. But I'm saying he claims that because it doesn't make much sense that someone would give them $1 billion. Because if they give them $1 billion, it would. And so I think the news that's coming out of China is like 25% of the company. So I'm not sure I would value the Faraday Future at $4 billion, and it never delivered a product. You're not even close to deliver a product. So it's $4 billion for their IP, which is which is, like I said, it's a cool car, but I wouldn't pay $4 million for that car
program.
It's
one cool car. It's not a manufacturing process or anything.
Yeah.
Plus, I have to say, it was absolutely a cool car, but when you're thinking about, okay, I want a cool SUV, clearly the Model X is the standard bearer, I guess, of the cool EV, crossover or SUV. There's not a lot that the Faraday Future 91 does that the Model X can't do. I mean, for a little bit, it was faster, but, Tesla threw a couple updates there, and now the Model X is faster. So, I mean, it does look nice. It does have a bigger back seat, which I think is a bigger thing in China. I think a lot of folks there prefer to ride in the back and have somebody drive them, whereas here, for the most part, we're drivers in the U.S. But in Europe, I think the backseat driving is a Chinese thing, or just the capitalist class there are
they like to be driven.
They like to be driven. So, from my standpoint, the FF91, when we looked at it at CES, seemed like, whoa, the back seat is huge. It's like a limo. And the front seat didn't seem that exciting. So maybe that's something that they'll say, hey, this is a thing that we're building for the Chinese market, and we're going to take on Tesla there. Because, the Tesla, the Model X, isn't fantastic in the back seat. It's not fantastic from a super luxury standpoint anywhere. But if you're into minimalist stuff, it's great. It's perfectly fine for me. It's very enjoyable. But the Mercedes folks are always you pay for this plastic. What?
Yeah.
So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what they do.
For the main part of what I liked about that news this week is it gave us a chance to look again at the EV startup scene. So right now, just a quick summarize the scene I see it right now. So there's a big question mark on Faraday Future. If they really did get that $1 billion for 25% of the company, then yeah, they have a good chance to bring something to market. That's great for them. But I have a big question mark over that. So this new Velocity startup, that's a great new addition. I think it's going to be on the scene. What else we like in the EV startup world right now? Lucid Motors, but also a big question mark on it because they were supposed to close their last funding round for a year now, and that hasn't happened. So as long as they don't close that, they don't start work on their factory in Arizona. So they need to close that, or they need to sell out to an automaker or something like that. I'd like to see that, actually. So selling out to just start a new EV program with the car. What else I like to do in the EV space? SF Motor. Do you remember SF Motor with Martin Heberhard?
Oh, yeah. I know that name.
Yeah, you know that name. So if you've been following Tesla for a while, you know that name too. Martin Heberhard was the original co-founder of Tesla. Was in and out of the EV industry for a while. Started out a startup with a Bosch engineer in Germany. A startup focusing on just an electric powertrain, battery pack technology, electric motor, and stuff like that. And they ended up being bought by SF Motor, which is a division of Socon, which is a commercial vehicle maker in China. So a big Chinese company. They started out a smaller EV division. So SF Motor is just electric vehicles. And they invested heavily in the US. They bought the former Hummer plant, Hummer factory in, I want to say, Tennessee. I'm not sure. In the South, I think Tennessee.
The South is fine.
Yeah, I might be mistaken, but they bought the former Hummer plant, a big factory. They bought that, and they want to restart it with electric vehicles, and electric vehicles built with an electric power plant, a power train developed by Heberhard and his new team of engineers. So it's going to be the revival of the old school Tesla. Tesla changed a lot from the early days when Hibberard was in charge of the engineering aspect.
Yeah, and you know, it should be mentioned that Eberhard was the one who kind of kicked off this next generation of electric vehicles when he decided, like, you know, he came from the he had built an e-reader or something. He was the one who said, "What are we doing with lead acid batteries or nickel, cadmium, whatever?" He was like, "You know, we have these batteries that we put in our electronics that are way better at what we need. The problem is we have to put 7,000 of them into a car." And he was the one who was crazy enough to do that and with the T0, and they had the...
Yeah, a lot of people are crediting him for the idea to bring lithium batteries that were mainly used in consumer electronics to an electric vehicles. It's a disputed subject. Some people want to give less credit to Eberhard, more to other people at Tesla and at AC Propulsion and all the companies that were working on it at that time. But from the information that we have, we understand from it, he had a big part to play in it. So that's something to take into account when looking at his new venture, which is SFF Motor. So big question mark on Lucid Motor, Faraday Future, but still a lot of potential there. Then we have the new Velocities, the new SF Motor. What else am I forgetting? Something
you know who's not a startup? Jaguar.
Yeah, we had also a Jaguar new for the high pace this week. Some information leaked in the Netherlands for early reservation order, and we got an idea of the price in the Netherlands. And if we convert them for our US audience, it looks like the model will start about at 76,000.
Which is Model X base price-ish.
Yeah, if you look at all the different configuration, it's basically priced like a Model X. So that's disappointing for a lot of people because we were mostly expecting it to be priced below the Model X, closer to like $60,000 range or something like that.
Yeah, we were thinking actually Model Y, which we don't know anything about, but like, you know, like a smaller, because it is smaller than the Model X. It's certainly shorter, I think.
Yeah, it's on all dimensions are smaller, much smaller, like maybe 5%, something like that.
Right, so to have it priced at the same price as a Model X, that's a little bit disappointing, you know, at least out of the, you know, Jaguar, I'm sure it's going to have a much nicer interior. It's going to have that cachet, I guess, of you know, the Jaguar, like whatever. But you know, it more EVs the merrier. I'm not going to discount it. I would love to try one out. I would love to drive one. I hope they come to the US pretty quickly.
Yeah, and to be clear, it's not guaranteed. That's the price. Yeah, that's information that from Jaguar that was leaked to early reservation order in the Netherlands. Then those price were converted, where like the taxes, the VAT taxes were removed, value added taxes, and then converted to the US. So that's not the US price that they're gonna sell it in the US. But if I have to assume, I think it's gonna be cheaper in Europe because it's gonna be manufactured in Europe. So and not even in the UK, they have a new factory somewhere in Central Europe, I think.
Okay.
Hungary.
Oh, we're certainly excited to see it. I'm excited anyway. Like I think it'll be a fun car.
Next year is going to be excited for EV guys. The I-Pace is going to kick it off mid-year with a launch early in the year. Then production is going to start in middle late of the year. Then we have the Audi Quattro that's going to come out too. There's going to be the long range Leaf too that's going to come out. So. Longer range, if you want to be accurate, since it's not that around 50 miles right now, it's not that bad. A lot of EVs coming in the next year. Well, not that many the next year, but a few new EVs coming next year. Then 2019, 2020, that's going to be the real crazy part, I think.
You think Chevy's going to release their Bolt platform vehicles next year at all? I mean, we haven't seen anything. They might announce.
You mean a new vehicle on the Bolt platform?
Yeah.
No, I think it's closer to 19 or 2020 even. I don't think they're that close.
Yeah, we would have heard about it by now.
Yeah. still a lot of exciting stuff. Tesla 2 as the the Model Y should be coming up at some point.
Yeah, I'm sure we're going to hear more about it this year.
Yeah, in 2018. I think we're going to see it in 2018, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Maybe even a pickup truck.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was a fun episode, guys. As usual, you can get it on all your podcast applications, and on the video is on YouTube, and we are always on live at 4 p.m. Eastern time on Fridays.
We'll see you next
week.
Yeah, and we'll see you next week.